Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Discover a new educational and interactive podcast, Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids. Our episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We went shape hunting around the block, and we found spheres and cubes on the street.
That was great fun. Join Stories for Kids, the Lingo Kids podcast, inspiring you to learn while having fun. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Hello, puzzlers! Welcome to the Puzzler Podcast, the hot towel at your puzzle spa. I am your host, AJ Jacobs, and I am here with our chief puzzle officer, Greg Polisco. Welcome, Greg.
Thank you, AJ. I'm enjoying a little hot towel. I actually think of the puzzler as the cucumbers on your eyes at the puzzle spa.
All right. Everyone go back and mentally change the intro because that is more accurate. By the way, happy April Fool's Day, Greg.
It is
April
thank
Fool's
you.
Day.
Is it really? Are you teasing me? Is this a prank?
Well, it is a prank because we're recording it several weeks ahead of time, but...
Oh, well, pull back the curtain. There
we go. But for our sake, yes, it is April Fool's Day. And I was thinking, though, for puzzlers, every day is April Fool's Day because puzzles are kind of like a little mild prank. They're all about misdirection and gotcha moments. So I wanted today to celebrate April Fool's Day by talking about three famous puzzle pranks that have had varying degrees of success. So are you ready?
I'm ready. I always love puzzles. I love pranks. And I love your stories about puzzles.
Well,
so let's do
you.
It.
All right. Puzzle prank number one. You might remember this. The April Fool's Day crossword puzzle in the New York Times in 2016. And when I describe it, you might remember it was friend of the show, Peter Gordon, wrote a crossword on April 1st, 2016 that struck fear into the hearts of crossword lovers everywhere. Very controversial, but brilliant. Because when you solved the puzzle and read the answers together, they said, due to budget cuts, the New York Times crossword puzzle will end tomorrow. And people freaked out. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Were you fooled?
Well, no, because I recognized it was April Fool's Day, but it was a fun thing to discover. Absolutely.
As I went back and read the comments and people were, I mean, most people thought it was brilliant, but there were people who got it. I guess some local newspapers printed a few days later. So they got it on like, you know, April 8th and they're like, you know, what the hell? And yeah, people were really tearing their hair out. Oh, by the way, the word prank has appeared in the New York Times crossword puzzle many times, and you often play the crossword family feud game with us. So what is your guess? What is the most common clue for prank? What is the most common prank used by New York Times puzzle makers.
The most common clue for prank is probably April Fool's Day antic or something
right.
like that.
Well, I'm looking for more like what is an actual prank, like loosening the top on a salt shaker. Like,
oh, what prank do they use to clue the word prank? Putting a banana peel on the floor.
Nope.
No, nope. Because nobody really ever does that. Have you ever actually seen somebody slip on a banana peel?
No, that would be serious litigation.
Like, doesn't happen.
That's not a good prank. That's like a lawsuit. All right.
Toothpaste in your Oreo cookies?
That's a good one, but it's not in there. Short cheating. Short cheating. There were four or five short cheating, which I've never done or had done to me. Have you?
Nor I, but you go to camp and you go to college, wherever you go, there is, it's, you know, a thing everybody talks about.
Yeah, everyone talks about it, but I've never seen it done.
Never
I feel it's,
Not to digress too much, we did a thing in college once where we, while one of our friends was at class, we took his entire dorm room and moved it into the quad and set up all the furniture in the exact same configuration.
Well, that is good. That's way beyond short cheating. By the way, as always, thanks to X-Word Info website, which is the one where they list every clue in the New York Times ever. It's crazy. All right, moving on to prank number two. As you might remember, Greg, in the book The Puzzler, written by A.J. Jacobs with puzzles by Greg Pliska, there is a section on Stave jigsaw puzzles. Mm-hmm. And this is a company with the craziest, trickiest, and most expensive jigsaw puzzles in the world. They are hand-carved out of wood. They run from $400 up to $10,000. I visited the factory in Vermont, and it's wild because there are these five people at these contraptions that look like sewing machines after a nuclear disaster. There's like warp, and they are carving painted wood into these crazy shapes like dogs and rainbows and astronauts. And they're famous for their tricky puzzles. So some of the puzzles have holes in the middle, or there are no straight edges. The guy who runs it calls himself Chief Tormentor.
that's my new title, actually.
You are a Chief Tormentor.
I'm going to be coming up from the puzzle dungeon rather than the puzzle lab.
I like it. Well, a few years ago on April 1st, the Chief Tormentor went too far with his tormenting. He sold some puzzles where some of the pieces were too big to fit. They were like 20% bigger than they should have been. People were not happy. They did not think that was funny. And he had to refund all of their money. So that was a prank that went awry.
Make that? I guess you design the regular size piece and then you have your magic apocalyptic sewing machine do a larger cut of that one
exactly.
piece.
Exactly. I think that was it. But never to be done again.
No, didn't go well. The wooden pieces are more durable than the normal kind of cardboardy one. Is that the idea?
Yeah, it's just a joy to do them. They're lovely. And you can rent them. So if you know, $400 is a crazy amount, but you can rent them or swap them.
You rent them by the hour? It's gonna be bad, right? It's like, oh God.
I know, because some of them, like the one that they consider the hardest, took me weeks. So yeah, that would be more expensive on an hourly basis. All right, puzzle prank number three. This is an old one, a classic from Alice in Wonderland by Lewis Carroll. This is not April Fool's, but it is in the prank genre, so we include it. Alice is at the tea party and the Mad Hatter asks her a riddle. He says, why is a raven like a writing desk? And Alice gives up and the Mad Hatter says, I haven't the slightest idea. And so basically, it was a riddle with no answer. Alice was not happy. She said, stop wasting my time. And it turns out readers agreed with Alice. They were like, stop wasting our time, Lewis Carroll. They wanted an answer to the riddle, which again was, why is a raven like a writing desk? And they pestered him so much that eventually in the preface to a volume that came out later, he said, all right, I'm going to give you an answer, even though it's made up after the fact. And his answer was, because it can produce a few notes, though they are very flat, and it is never put with the wrong end in front. So there it is. It can produce a few notes, though they are very flat.
There's another answer to that, though, that I know, which is they both have inky quills.
Oh, there right? you go.
The feathers are quills that are inky black, or the desk has it.
Oh, but, nice.
But really, it's funner without an answer, because that long, convoluted response from Lewis Carroll is a little kind of a, doesn't land the punchline really well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that is, and that has become a little niche pastime of what are alternative answers to Lewis Carroll's riddle. You had one. Let me give you another couple. Because Edgar Allan Poe wrote on both. He wrote on a desk and he wrote about ravens.
Yeah, that's a good one, actually.
What about because they both have two eyes? So ravens have two eyes and writing desk is two eyes, as in the letter I.
That's very good. That's also why a cow is like a writing desk. And why you're like a writing desk, and why a giraffe is like a writing desk. But fine. It's
all purpose, yeah.
Yeah.
How about they both involve quills? I think you, wasn't
Yeah,
that
they both have inky quills, which gets even more specific.
Right. I heard all these theories first from this Lewis Carroll expert who has thousands of Lewis Carroll books and paraphernalia in his house. And I asked him what his favorite answer was, and he said, his favorite answer is, there's a B in both. There's a B in both. And I was like, I don't really. And then he kept repeating it, and I finally got it. And I was annoyed, but also kind of impressed, which is, yeah, there's a B in the word
both. In the word both, yeah. It's not an it's as absurd as the other question is.
Right, exactly. It's an absurd answer to the absurd question. It's kind of annoying, but also kind of clever. And it's also all purpose. Like anytime anyone asks you a riddle, what does X have in common with Y? You just say, oh, there's a B in both.
That's good. I'm going to use that as the answer to everything. There's a B in both.
There you go. And that is our April Fool's Day gift to you. Speaking of April Fool's Day, Greg, any good pranks that you have played or have had played upon you?
You know, I have a prank story. It wasn't April Fool's when this happened. It was actually summer. It was one of my summer jobs during college. I was a typesetter at a firm that did labels. So we did type for all kinds of different labels, one of which was a major grocery chain in California. And we did all of the bakery labels. So they were, it was just words after word of very tiny, very condensed little type of just all these ridiculous ingredients. And after a long summer of doing this, I had a really good rapport with the next guy in line, the guy who took the type I did, and then he pasted it up. And I thought, I'm going to do a funny thing for Bill. At the end of the list of ingredients, I think it was hot cross buns. It was like 8 or 9 lines of tiny words. I wrote, guaranteed to make you vomit in 3 minutes or less. And I just put it in. I didn't say anything. I just, you know, printed it out and passed it on to him to set up. And I thought, this will be really funny because he'll be working and he'll see it and he'll crack up and then he'll cut off that little sentence and it'll be fine. So, you know, we went on with our work day. The week went on. I forgot to see if he'd gotten the prank and I went back to college. And a couple months into college, I get a call from my former boss. Says, Greg, you're fired. And I said, well, you know, Chuck, I'm not working there anymore. He said, I know, that's why you're getting fired instead of Bill or anybody else. Because nobody caught mistake. And in fact, the grocery chain approved the mock-up of the labels. It went into production. They produced 10,000 of these labels. And the only thing that saved me from like everlasting infamy is that a guy in the warehouse was looking for which hot cross buns he had to stick these labels on when he read the label down and he noticed the fine print at the end that said,
my God,
guaranteed to make you vomit in 3 minutes or less. Needless to say, he wasn't happy. The grocery chain wasn't happy. And I never had a career as a typesetter.
That is crazy. Well, I mean, you would have had, like, that's a multi-million dollar lawsuit. People,
exactly.
No one would ever buy him again.
Yeah, exactly. And the place would have gone out of business. It just so I barely died. So be careful what pranks you play. That's
there's
the moral
a good
of the
lesson.
Story.
Excellent yes. moral. Well, that is very funny. All right. Well, folks, watch out today for things like that. Just be careful.
I'm not letting my son listen to this episode. He can't listen to it till later.
Yeah, that is don't do what Greg did, but do keep listening to our show. And as an extra credit, if you have other answers to Lewis Carroll's riddle, please send them in and we'll try to read them on the air. And please join us next time for more Puzzling Puzzles that will puzzle you puzzlingly.
Hey there, puzzlers. This is Greg Pliska, your chief puzzle officer, up from the Puzzle Lab with the answer to the extra credit from our previous episode. I played a language game with AJ where every word ended in I-S-H, E-S-E, or I-A-N and sounded like the name of a language but wasn't. Your extra credit clue was this. It's a condiment, or it's a language spoken by people who think equines are cool. And that, of course, would be horseradish. Horse-rad-ish. I think horses are rad, and I hope you think horses are rad, too. And I hope you think puzzles are even more rad. Come play some more puzzles with us next time on the Puzzler Podcast.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Discover a new educational and interactive podcast, Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids. Our episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We went shape hunting around the block, and we found spheres and cubes on the street.
That was great fun. Join Stories for Kids, the Lingo Kids podcast, inspiring you to learn while having fun. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.